Good. So we've been discussing Pshara. We have discussed some of the Gemaras involved in all of that. We were discussing the Gemara here on Dav Vav Amud Aleph. Number one, the Gemara discusses whether Makshinan Pshara Ladin, whether or not we compare Pshara, compromise, and Din, whether you need three Dayan and one Dayan, correct? And in that, the last things that we were discussing was that when the Gemara has that discussion, whether you need three Dayanim or one, and the Gemara ends up concluding on Vav Amud Aleph that the debate is whether Makshinim Pshara Ladin. So the Gemara also does a very interesting thing from a literary point of view, and that is when it describes the Man D'Amar who says that you require three Dayanim, it calls it Bitsua, Bitsua B'Shlosha, right here on Vav Amud Aleph, right? It says, "Leimekatanoi bitzua b'shlosha divrei Rabbi Meir v'chacham nomrim pshara b'yachid." So again, I don't want to go through the whole thing because we did it last week. But just to recap very quickly, is that part of the question is there's a debate whether it's three or one, and there's also seems to be a terminological change whether you're talking about the mandamar three or the mandamar one. We're calling it either bitzua or pshara. And we also noticed that on Vav Amud Beis there are different views whether Pshara is a problem, because Yikov Adina Sahar, we're going to read those Gemaras again very quickly, the Midah of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is that we should be strict about the ideal of Din, right? And we should not veer at all, from strict Din, because that is the objective truth. That's one view. And then the other view of the Gemara is that, no, on the contrary, we should be flexible and we should promulgate, pshara's, compromises. And then later on, which we didn't get to yet, but we're going to read it very quickly today, the Gemara again seems to say that maybe there are three positions. There's a, Mandamar says mitzvah livtsoa, there's one who says that asur livtsoa, and there's one who says that it's, rashoi, you're allowed to. It sounds like he's, a more lukewarm position. What's fascinating is that even lahalacha, there seems to be a debate. We normally paskin that it's mitzvah levtsoa, right? But what's interesting is that, number one, when you look at the language of the Gemara, we'll look at it very quickly in a minute. So let's just look at it for a second. On Vav Amud Beis, the Gemara says, on the bottom, also lekamed Rav Huna, Omar, the last line, Idina bi'itu, ipshara bi'itu. Right? So in our text, when the alternatives are offered, it's idina bi'itu, right? Ipshara bi'itu. The order is, do you want din or do you want pshara? In the tour, when he quotes this line, he says, ipshara bi'itu, idina bi'itu. And the Nosei Kalim, the Bach, and others jump in and they say, ooh, that's not what it says in the Gemara. It says, Idina bi'itu, ipshara bi'itu. So, what's the difference? I mean, it's an alternative either way. The answer is because everybody's antennae are raised. Everybody is very aware here. Are we giving a little edge? What do we really, really prefer? Even if it's a mitzvah of Tzoa, right, is the mitzvah that it's equal, or is the mitzvah really that it's preferred? So the first alternative, when I give you two alternatives, right, there's a very subtle advantage to the first one. That's the one that I'm mentioning, first. So it's interesting. The you have this question of the girsa and the order. You also have, there could be another explanation. Even if I have the girsa, which most do, Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, idina bi'itu, ipshar bi'itu, maybe the reason for the order is not because we're a little bit reticent, even according to the Mandamar, that it's a mitzvah, but it could be for a different reason. That is that the default is that everybody has the right to din, as we said before. You have to give away, you have to decide, if two Bali Dinim argue, one says I want a pshara, and the other one says I want a din, so yeah, it's din. Because the default is, everybody has, the legal rights of each one of the Bali Dinim is that this case be decided according to din. So it could be that the order, Idina bi'itu, ipshara bi'itu, doesn't reflect a slight preference, but it reflects the default. Meaning, do you want to stick with the default? Meaning, if any one of you insists on doing this by your rights, it's going to be din. Or do you both want to make a change to something maybe that is even preferable, namely pshara? What's fascinating is if you look in Shulchan Aruch, so if, even within the girsa, idina b'itu, pshara b'itu, there's a debate. So that the Taz, you know, quotes the view of the Maral, the Rambam in Prague, who says, you know, even the Mandamar says mitzvah of tsoa thinks it's a second option. You know, not what I just said about the default. That the ultimate preference is always din, but that doesn't mean that we're not positively disposed to pshara. We are. We don't consider it a b'di'evet. It's not just a heter. It's also a mitzvah, but it comes in a close second, but still second to din. That's what the Taz quotes in the name of the Maral, the Prague. But the Sma, I just want to say this, that the Sma says, no, that's not what it means. That really, if it's mitzvah of tzoa, then we should really try to sell pshara, and that pshara should be the real preferred state. So even whether, you know, it's reflected in language, you know, which one comes first, but even if it comes second, there's really a debate among Poskim and Shulchan Aruch, what do we prefer? So the question of calling it bitzua or pshara from a literary standpoint, which is connected both with whether you need three or one, and whether it's a mitzvah or an iser, that's the ha'ara that the Yad Ramah made, which we saw last week and a couple of times, where he says that two opposite ideas. One is, he says, Botseya either refers to the fact that it's asur, and it's a language of gezel, because in a way, when you do a pshara, you're taking money from the person who really deserves to win completely, right? So you're taking money from Ruvain's pocket and splitting it, you know, with Shimon. And that's gezel. And the Mandamur says, Botseya really holds that it is asur libtsoa. If you do it, it works, but it's asur libtsoa. That's the first view of the Ramah. But the preferred view of the Ramah, which he repeats several other times, is the exact opposite. He says, well, if it's three dayanim and it's makshin on pshara l'din, that's because we are equating it with real din. Meaning what we're saying is, this isn't just a concession to peace. We're using the principles of Choshen Mishpat, and we're trying to come to a more but we're using them more flexibly, because we're not worried about low plugs and things of that sort. So we can focus 100% on what's fair according to the rules, though, of the law, according to the ideals of Choshen Mishpat, what's the preferred resolution in this particular case. And therefore we need Makshinam Charladin, and therefore we call it Botseya, because Botseya means that you're cutting things very precisely to make sure that you're getting exactly the right response. But Pshara, he says, that, you know, because we're not Makshinam Charladin, that's just Shalom. So it's lukewarm. It's like for the language of Poshrin. Poshrin is lukewarm water. We're not so excited about this. You could do it, but it doesn't have the same effect. Yeah.
He who says pshara is a mitzvah. What is it? What mitzvah is he mikayim, or is he not even on a losas? What mitzvah is it?
No, they don't really mean that it's a separate mitzvah. Well, mishpat sheyesh bo tzedek. It's a kiyum in mishpat. It's not a separate mitzvah in minyan tayag. They don't mean that. What they mean is that the obligation to follow din, I mean, it's really tzedek tirdof, as we discussed, right? The Gemara in Lama Deisum at Deis says that there are two psukim, this we saw already. One is betzedek tishpon amisecha, and the other one is tzedek tirdof. And then the Gemara says, echad ledin, v'echad lepshara. Now, these are mitzvahs, betzedek tishpon amisecha and tzedek tirdof are not two separate mitzvahs, but they are part of one mitzvah, the mitzvah to seek justice in the court system. And according to, again, we'll go back to the Ramah, because he just, you know, has a very consistent view of the sugya. But what we saw last week was, the Ramah says, how come Pshara, the Ramah's reading, let me say it this way, Rashi says that tzedek tirdof means the double tzedek is tzedek din, tzedek pshara.
So it's a nice.
So it's one. It's all in one pasuk. The Ramah says, no, that's not the pshat. There are two psukim. The tzedek tishbor amisecha is din. Tzedek, tzedek tirdov, that whole pasuk is pshara. So he says, how come we need a double tzedek? Right? The answer is, because it's much easier, says the Ramah, to accomplish din than to accomplish pshara. Because pshara, according to the view that it's a fine tuning, it's the principles of din with the flexibility of the particular case, so you really need a lot of wisdom. You need to be Shlomo Melech, you know, every single time. So he says, for that you need a double dose of tzedek. That's tzedek tzedek. So according to him, the mitzvah is tzedek tzedek tirdov. Now we don't count separately, but tzedek tishbor and tzedek 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 tirdov. It's all within din, but the point is, what's the preferred method? What's the highest key of a mitzvah, of this mitzvah of seeking justice? Is it by means of yikov adin sahar, or is it by means of pshat? That's really the issue. And that's really, as we've seen, this breaks down into a whole bunch of issues. How many dayanim do you need? The language? Is there a concept of ta'us, you know, in pshar? How can there be a concept of ta'us if it's just shalom, as we discussed? But the Rabbi Kadeger and some of the other achronim, Pisrei Tshuva has a whole discussion about it. They say, yeah, you can make a mistake. And there can be a malpractice in dayanim who are involved in a pshara. Obviously, because there are rules, our principles. This is what the Riyaz says. The dayanim have to be deciding, not arbitrarily, not just pragmatically based on what brings the greatest harmony and tranquility. That's a factor too, but not the main factor. The real factor is a fine-tuned application of the principles, the judicial principles and the legal principles here. But just unencumbered by what they normally are limited by, which is, you know, the need to objectify them, to make them apply across generations and across different circumstances. Because we're only caring about this case right now. That's the difference between pshara and din, if pshara is a form of din. So it's really a very, very demanding and very ideal application of din, if you look at it that way. If you see it as pshara, as shalom, it's a whole different story. Yeah.
So the principle of stare decisis, as they have in the civil law, wouldn't apply to pshara.
Say that again, the principle of?
Stare decisis, in other words, you use that precedent, a decision, but you couldn't do that with pshara, because pshara is focused on an individual case.
Right, but you could still use precedent in order to elicit the principles of the law. In other words, if there's a certain ambiguity, right, in the system, and the way to tease out that ambiguity or to clarify it or to illuminate it, right, is by invoking precedent, you know, and that will, you know, clarify, you know, the principle of the law, you know, in a way that it makes it clearer and easier to apply, then precedent will still be relevant to pshara. Just that you won't be bound by precedent as a, you know, as a burden in a way. You know, which you would have to align the rulings with other precedents, because you have the flexibility of saying, you know what, Yikov HaDin HaSahar law, I mean the objectified law, the laws that's on the books, that has an added dimension of lo plug, which I'm not burdened by here. But anything having to do with the ideal of the law, the principles behind it, those precedents will be relevant. So it'll be two types of precedents. Yeah.
Is it possible for a dayan in a pshara to completely side with one side?
Yes. It is possible. It depends on the case.
But the baal din, the other one, kind of, it can't be, because the very fact that the other baal din subjected himself to a pshara was almost a hudos baal din that he's not supposed to
do
at all.
Not really. Because as we said last week, there can be numerous motivations for accepting a pshara. Because sometimes when you're, even if you're right and you're going to win a case, you're going to lose, you know, by destroying friendships or relationships, you know, that in the end might be more valuable, either socially or religiously, or in some cases even economically, right? Sometimes, you know, being right, you know, is even financially destructive. And when wiser you know, heads prevail, then even, you know, even then, you know, then the pshara, it ends up being, you know, a premium solution, you know, from every point of view. So that isn't so clear that that would be the case. Okay, let's continue with the Gemara just for a couple minutes. And then I want to do this big tosis, which we started talking about a little bit last time, the idea of whether or not, whether you need a kinyan, why you need a kinyan, and how this relates to a broader topic called Mechila Yitzarech, kinyan or not. Okay. But before we get to that, I just want to go through the Shakla Vitaria, especially since next week we're going to be doing a Pesach topic, so let's just finish up some of the Gemaras here very quickly. So the Gemara says that Tan Rabbanan, Kishem Shadin B'Shlosha Kach Bitzua B'Shlosha. The Gemara says that just, this is the last line on Vav Mem Aleph, just as Din is with three, as we just read, so Bitzua, right, Pshara, in the form of Bitzua, is with three. But Nigmar Din, Yatara Shalivtsa. Once there's a Gemara Din, once a Psak has been rendered, then it's too late to switch to Pshara. And as we read this last week, we noted there's a very important debate between Rashi and Tosas here. Rashi says that what does it mean, Nigmar Din? Nigmar Din means, Sha'amru ish ploniat zaka ish ploniat achai. Meaning, a formal psak din is rendered according to the objective regular din. At that point, the Dayanim should not be advocating pshara. The Bali Tosas disagree. They say if we were talking about a formal Gemar Din, then this would be so obvious that the Gemara wouldn't even need to, you know, inform us. It must be that what it means is that once the Dayanim know themselves how they're going to paskin, because before they pronounce the formal psak, they already have figured out, you know, they've spent a lot of time thinking about the case, discussing it, you know, amongst each other. And, you know, at this point, they know what's going to happen. Again, that doesn't mean that they can't change their mind last minute, but until they do, and unless they do, they know where this case is going. So the Bali Tosas think that even at that point, it would be improper, once they know how they're going to paskin, it would be improper to be counseling the Bali Dinim for a pshar. Because in a way, it's a little bit misleading, especially to the, you know, potential or the person who stands to be the victor, you know, in the case. Until it's been clarified and there's some sort of ambiguity, at least in the eyes of the judges, so it's still advantageous for both parties that there be a pshara. But the second that the dayanim, it's just a missing a formal pronouncement, at that point it's already too late. That's an interesting argument between Rashi and Tosfos. Yeah.
So why is it so outlandish? Why does Tosfos say it was so outlandish that Dayanim would not try to make pshara after Gemar Din? Why wouldn't they go after Gemar Din? Why wouldn't they go after the Bali Din and say, listen, you know, we've done this one way, but really there's a higher.
So I think that I mentioned this.
Form of resolution that maybe.
Well, I guess the point is that that, you know, the, especially if you take the view, you know, that, you know, pshara is a process. It's not just, if it isn't just peace. So, you know, at a certain point, you know, it becomes too late to switch. It's all an internal question, right? You know, either way they're getting judged and the law, you know, is being, you know, applied. So there's a certain integrity, you know, to the process itself. So to divert, you know, from one approach, let's say, to another, you know, before the end of the case is appropriate. But, you know, once you, you know, kind of have reached that end point, so, you know, it's not really honest to the Bali Dinim, you know, to be, you know, presenting a totally different alternative. If it was pure peace, I don't think it would be outlandish, frankly. But if these are two forms of justice, each with different qualifications and credentials, then I think the integrity of the process requires that you, at some point, you know, adopt one of them, and you can't, you know, you can't have both at the same time. That's what the Rishonim are saying.
What if the Bali Dinim want to switch?
Oh, so I think I mentioned last time that the Riyaz, says that there are two types of psharas. There's a pshara of the dayanim and there's a pshara of the bali dinim. And he says the pshara of the dayanim is a form of din, and it has to be according to the principles of din. And that's the one where there are limits, and at a certain point it's improper, you know, to switch. You're too far in the process, you know, to switch within the process. But he says the pshara of bali dinim, which is about shalom, it's never too late for that. And that's how he interprets the continuation of the Gemara, because the Gemara said that Moshe Rabbeinu is the author, you know, of Din Yikom Adin Sahar, and Aaron HaKohen is the, you know, exemplar of Shalom. So the Rishonim, some of them at least, did not, you know, didn't sit well with them to say that there's an argument between Aaron HaKohen and Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what I mean? So, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, Rabban shall call Yisrael. So they didn't think it was a fair fight. So what they tried to explain was, both Rashi and Tosas and the Riyaz, each in a slightly different way, that what the Gemara is saying is, these are different tchunot, these are different midos, but they're not usually in conflict, because they refer to different stages. So the point of Moshe Rabbeinu is, if you come to court, then what's preferred is din. But if you go to Aaron HaKohen, who isn't the judge, or before the Din Torah, or according to the Riyaz, if you want a pshara of bali dinim, not a pshara of dayanim, then Aaron HaKohen model is for you. So that's the answer. That if it's the pshara of bali dinim, then that would be fine. Either way, this comes from the continuation of the Gemara, where the Gemara says as follows: Rabbi Elazar ben Shabbos Yosi Avgili Omer Asur Liftzoa V'Chala Botzeh Areiz Achote V'Chala Mavarech Esabotzeh Areiz Aminotz. We read the beginning of this last time. I want to just get through it. So, Ella, Yikov Adin Sahar. So this is the extreme view that says that Pshara is inferior to Din. Obviously, it isn't the form of Din. And obviously, the stand that's being taken here is that Shalom is not an alternative for Din either. And since the, you know, Yadus very much admires Din, Vayigba Hashem Tzvakos B'mishpat, right? Mishpat and Din have a very, very Ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lefnehem, right? So Yikov Adin Sahar is the rule. Shenema Kiyam Mishpat, and that's a pasuk. Kiyam Mishpat Lelo Kimhu, right? Mishpat is associated with Ribono Shalom transcendence. And remember, we said earlier in the year that the source of Dayan Samuch is the word Elohim. B'nikar Balabai Salhu Elohim. As if to say, a Dayan is doing, you know, a Dayan who is a secular Elohim is doing the, you know, the work of Elohim. It's a play on the word. V'chein Moshe Yomer Yikov Adin Asahar. Aval Aaron, Oev Shalom, Ronev Shalom, Emesim Shalom, Enam Lechavei, Roshin Emar Toras Anes, Ha'isab Efiyu, V'avla Lo Nimtza B'Sfasav, B'Shalom, B'Mishar Halach. Right? Iti, V'Rabim Heishiv, So if you look at Rashi, this is what I was referring to before. Rashi says, Osur Livtsoa, the second Rashi, Mishabo Lo Ladin, Osur Ladayonim Livtsoa. Once you come to court, there's no Pshara. Aval Aaron, look at the next Rashi, or two Rashis, right? Aval Aaron, Oiv Shalom Rodo Shalom, Mikivin Choya Shomea, Machlokas Beneim, Kodim Shiavo, Lefanda of Ladin, Hayarode Fachareyan, Umato Shalom Beneim, Aaron, you know, got to them before they came to court. So that wasn't the problem of Yikov Adin Esahar. That's what Tosas says too. If you look at Tosas, Tosas says, Aval Aaron, right? Pirish, Kim Shalohaya Dayan, Velohaya Din Balifanav, Ela Lifnei Moshe, Vadai, Lididei Shari. Aaron wasn't arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu's psak, and he wasn't competing with Moshe Rabbeinu. But if you came to Aaron, it's because you weren't yet ready to go to a Dayan. Right, you were looking for somebody to intercede, you know, to impose or to at least recommend, you know, a harmonious solution. So these are two equally but different perspectives. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Hareisha Gazal Sasha Chitim V'Tachana V'Afa V'Hifresh Menu Chala. He's trying to explain the pasuk, same pasuk. Ketzim Mavarech, Ein Zem Mavarech, Ela Minoitz. He says, no, that's not the pshat in Botzea Birech Nietz Menoitz. Menoitz, blasphemy, is a person who steals, right? And then he's trying to make a bracha on the hafrashas challah of the thing that he steals. Okay, making a bracha on the mitzvah. How about that? We're going to leave that for now. That's not our issue at the moment. Rameir Omer, lo nemar botzeh l'keneged Yehuda, another pshat. It says, Yehuda shenemar b'yom Yehuda elachiv, elachav, sorry, ma betza ki narog es achinu. Anyway, kolam b'varach es Yehuda reza benayit, because Yehuda, you know, since he did know better, he should have, you know, also done better. Ba'zeh nemar u'betzeh abireich niyetz Hashem. Anyways, getting back to Pshara, so the first view was the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Osh, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who said, Osir Livtzoa, and the Ikaron, the principle, is Yikov Hadin Asahar, like Moshe Rabbein. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Mitzvah Livtzoa. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha takes an absolutely different view. It's Mitzvah Livtzoa. Shenemar, Emes U'Mishpat V'Shalom, right? Shiftu B'Shah Rechem. So what does this tell us? Mishpat ein shalom. Typically, when there's mishpat, there's no shalom. Mishpat and shalom seem to be, right, two very important values, but two very different values, and in some respects, mutually exclusive values. Because mishpat is about yikov hadin asahar, no matter how difficult the medicine is, right, that's the strict din. And of course, shalom is about concessions and peace and harmony and so on. So normally one is exclusive of the other. B'mokom sheish shalom ein mishpat. Ela ezu mishpat sheish bo shalom. What's a mishpat which, right, also integrates shalom? Question is how much mishpat, how much shalom in this integration? That's what we've been discussing, right? It's a good pithy way to kind of zero in on exactly what we've been talking about. Heve omer ze bitzua. The chen b'David omer says by David HaMelech, v'hi David osem mishpat utzdaka. So again, halo komokom sheish mishpat ein tzedaka. Tzedaka ein mishpat. Usually mishpat implies, again, hardcore rights, right, laws. Tzedaka is sounds like supererogatory, lifnei mishur hadin, right? You give somebody tzedaka, meaning you don't have to, right? You don't owe him. Right, you are doing it as an act of righteousness, not an act of law. Right? Ela ezu mishpat sheyesh bo tzedaka. Just these formulations are just very beautiful, right? What is a mishpat which is tinged with tzedaka, like we were talking before, right? About a din barachamim or a rachamim bedin, right? Heva omer ze bitzua. So the Gemara says, Asan the Tanakama, Darnas Adin Zika Sachayev, Chiv Sazakai, Rosh and Eschayev. Oni mamon. If you see that you have it in Torah and you're adjudicating it properly, and you know it's going to come out that the oni, is owes money to the asher, right? It can happen sometimes that the asher really was right, in the case. The shilem lo mitoch peso, and he pays him. Ze mishpat utzdaka. Mishpat laze, utzdaka laze. Mishpat laze, shehichser lo mamon. Meaning the usher got justice because money that was really, he was entitled to is returned to him. Utzdaka laze, sheshirim lo mitoch beso. And the tzedaka laze is that the dayan who felt, sympathy for this ani who didn't really have the wherewithal to pay, so he paid his debt for it. No, the mishpat was in giving the proper psak, not distorting the psak because of the financial, inequality, right? So you want to give tzedakah, that give tzedakah, but that shouldn't distort the mishpat of the din. So then the Gemara says, "Kasha the Rabbi, hay l'chol amola niyim b'boile." If it, why l'chol amo? It should say laniyim. Ela Rabbi Omer, afa bishalosh shilem mitoch beso. Even if the judge does not want to pay the debt of the ani, he's still done a service not only to the asher whose money is returned, But to the ani, you know, for whom it's very difficult to pay, but who is actually going to have to reach into his pocket and painfully make this payment, he's done him a favor as well.
Why?
Zeu mishpat utztaka. Mishpat lazeh. Utztaka lazeh. Mishpat lazeh shehichsava mimamono. And utztaka lazeh shehotzi gezela mitachas yado. It's not good, even for the ani, right, that he should be holding on to money that isn't his. Yeah.
Is this the source where all the schnorrers, they ask for tzedaka, but they really mean money? This has to be the source.
I hear. There's a lot. We need some takanas in our community. Okay. Well, you know, in Purim they say, you know, in Bodkin. But yeah. Well, you know, we say Al Tashiv Dach Nichlam. But if a person, you know, if they go around, you know, to 100 people in a room, that's not Dach Nichlam. And if a person holding a big, you know, wad of bills, that's not Dach either. But listen, some of the people I think are legitimate and collecting for good causes. And it's fine to give them if you want to support those causes. There's also a difference between people who are, you know, collecting for causes and people who are collecting for themselves. And then the people who are collecting for themselves, you really have to, you know, it's mamona tzibur, and it's important to find out. There's a lot to say about the topic. it's a very important topic. We you know, Klal Yisrael should be generous, and they are. But, you know, we also have to, you know, when people are indiscriminate about what they do and they're, you know, they end up, you know, being generous, it's almost like this Gemara. You're absolutely right, you know. You end up being generous, you know, to people who are, you know, in some cases exploiting it and don't really need it, and then you don't really have, you know, the funding for the people who, you know, who are more tzanua and who really do need it. So it's a very tough thing to figure out, and it requires a lot of wisdom. What can I say? We could talk about it another time. But Rab Shimon Nasya Omer, very fascinating Gemaras though, but this idea that psychologically even, I mean, you're not doing an ani a favor by letting him get away with, you know, theft, is a very important principle. It's a very big issue. Yeah.
The possible to see that in the Mishpat and Shalom and Mishpat and Tzedakah, that's the two sides of our of what we're looking at, as the Mishpat and Shalom is as a Pshar as Shalom and Mishpat and Tzedek as Pshar as a sort of din that's more.
I mean, in this whole
particular, right before when we had the two sukkim.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. 100%. That's exactly what I meant. That's exactly, in other words, the exact balance is hard to figure out. But you know, that's exactly what it is. There's a mishpat and there's a shalom together here, or a mishpat and a tzedek. Same idea.
Well, no, I was saying that one is more.
Oh, you want to say mishpat shalom is mishpat? I see what you're saying. You're saying mishpat shalom is shalom oriented, and the mishpat tzedek is the fine tuning of the.
I hear.
Very good. I didn't think about that, but that's a very good idea. I like it. That's a good suggestion. Yeah. Anyways, Rav Shimon Nasya Omer, Shnayim Shebo Lefanecha Ledin, when two people come to, you know, to court, so, Ad Shelo Tishma Divrayim, Omisha Tishma Divrayim, Ve'ena Tzadeh Leichan Adin Noteh, as, you know, if you haven't yet heard the case, or you've heard the claims and the counterclaims, but you don't yet have, you haven't yet formed a clear impression, you know, in terms of who, you know, who's meritorious, who has merit, and you know, whose position is meritorious and who's not, then atarashay lomar lahen tzu ubitzu. Then you can still say to them, you know what, this is the pshara of Dayani, not the pshara of Balidin, right? It might be better for you, or it's preferable, to go the route of bitzua of pshar. But misha tishma divrayim, atay yodeh leichan adin noteh, but once you know where it's going, now this is different than the view before that said that you can switch from din to pshara all the way until, according to Rashi, you actually pronounce the Gemara din, or according to the Bali Tosis reading of the Gemara, right before, you know, you've reached the point where you know exactly how it's going to end up. This is an even earlier stage. This is Atayodeh lehechan adin noteh, Right? We should take it literally, meaning, you know, we're getting the impression here, you know, that there's more. I mean, we haven't figured out exactly, you know, to the nth degree yet. I mean, we haven't come to a final conclusion, A. Or B, we don't know the extent of, you know, Reuven's, you know, victory over Shimon, but it's clear that he has a stronger case. Once you know that, according to this view in the Gemara, then there's no switching to Pshar. Shenemar, Potermayim, Reishis Madon, Vilifnei, Hitgala, Hariv, right, Netosh. What does that mean? Kodem Shenitgala, Hariv, before, you know, the your perspective on the Riv, on the quarrel, and the argument between them, you know, has been revealed to you, in other words. Atayacha Lenot show you can abandon the din, you know, for the sake of Pshar. But Mishin is Gala Hariv, Yatayachal Lenotcha. Okay. Rishlakish Amar Shnaim Shabol Ledin Echad Rach Vechad Kasha. If you have two Bali Dinim, one is, you know, an easygoing fellow, non threatening, you know, a regular citizen. And the other one is a difficult man, right? And maybe a, you know, an intimidating man. So Adshel Tishma Divrayam, it's fascinating, the same, a parallel halacha, Omisha Tishma Divrayam, V'yate Yodel Echen Adin Nota, if you've either you haven't heard the arguments yet, or, again, it's too early to have formed, you know, an opinion or a direction in your opinion, Atar Hashan Elam Mar Lahem, Ein Ani Niskak Lahem, I refuse to listen to this case. Shema Nischayev Chazak, because maybe you're going to have to find the intimidating fellow guilty. V'nim Chazak Rodfo, and we're worried that he, or you're going to be worried that he's going to retaliate against you. So this is a very fascinating, if we have a chance we'll speak about this more, this is a very interesting argument here. This is the Ish of Lo Sagur Mipnei Ish. And there's a very interesting argument here between Rashi and Tosas, and the Bach, in particular, in his Parish on the Tour, really, like, expanded this significantly. Are we worried here about, you know, life and limb? Like, you're really worried he's going to retaliate, you know, Pikuach Nefesh, or he's going to, you know, he's going to threaten you with physical violence? Or is the concern here, you know, much more, you know, about, you know, annoyance and his intimidating, you know, the process of the court? Is there a fear for personal safety? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says here that the problem is, second. Yeah, I have one of these Gemaras that doesn't. Kasha. Rashi says Balmariva Matriach Dayani. That's the one I wanted. Okay. So you see, I just don't have boldened. This is an old Gemara. They don't have the, you know, the newest fonts. You know, Balmariva Matriach Dayani. Meaning it's a hassle to deal with this fellow. Look at Tosas. Tosas says, "Benimsa chazak rodfo pirish ledayon." Not that he's going to be annoying to deal with in the din, but that we're concerned that he is going to pursue the dayon. I mean, the dayon is in some sort of either physical or financial danger. This clinches it. Tosa says, yeah, but if they're equally nasty, you know, if they're equally intimidating, so they cancel each other out. According to Rashi, if they were equally intimidating, it would be worse, right? Because the whole point is that this is not a pleasant, you know, so it's doubly unpleasant. But if you're worried about the personal safety, or you know, other aspects of the dayan. So the Bach discusses this at great length, and he says that, you know, he thinks that Rashi is correct, and if really there were any kind of threat to to the Dayan himself. If he felt personally intimidated, then he would be able to back out of a case much more easily. And other Rishonim clearly disagreed. Beis Yosef disagrees. And some of them have really very strong formulations about, there practically being no heter pikuach nefesh, you know, because of lo saguru mipnei ish. It's an interesting thing. Yeah, absolutely. In other words, this is a very interesting question. How do we really understand lo saguru mipnei ish? Does this have a special a dimension in din and for dayan? Or is lo saguru mipnei ish about, in general, a person, you know, should be, kvod shamayim is more important than kvod ha'adam. Right? So there seems to be, again, if I have a chance, maybe we'll speak about this, but not right now, there seems to be a very big debate, in addition to the debate between Rashi and Tosis and the Bach and the Beis Yosef, about this very important question, there seems to be a very big debate whether lo saguru mipnei ish is just an example, but it's part of a larger idea of kvod shamayim and kvod ha'adam. You should worry about the Rabbeinu Shalom's honor more than your own. A dayan is just a very public example of this, meaning he's going to distort the law or he's going to run away from his responsibility because of some annoyance or even because of a little bit of a threat, right? Or is this a special din, lo sagur b'pneish, is said in the parsha of dayanim, because the special hashgacha that dayanim have and a special role that they play, as we discussed in the beginning of the year, Elohim, because they themselves are the pillars of the law, if they're going to be intimidated, right, that's going to undermine the whole legal system. So a dayan, you know, has different dinim than others in terms of the kind of protection or pikuach nefesh, or hefzid mamon. The Bach basically is arguing on the basis of Rashi that, you know, the regular dinim should apply here. How far do you have to go in terms of losing money to fulfill a mitzvah saseh or a lav? What point, you know, to what extent do you have to put your physical life in jeopardy, you know, for mitzvos and so on? But it could be that lo saguru mipnei ish, that the status of a dayan, the person who, you know, represents din, that's a whole different category. So that's an interesting issue, one that gets played out in this particular sum. Yeah, did it sound like a question?
Yeah, is this only a case where there's a losa guru worry, but is it, or is there some sort of fear that once you reach this point, you need to give?
So that's a very good question. That is also machlokas in the poskim. It seems to me the question how you read the Hagos Ashri on the rush here, meaning some people say, well, if you can't walk away out because of intimidation, you know, when you hear a case and you know la'ichan adinota, then you certainly can't walk away just because, you know, you decided you don't want to be, you know, bothered with this particular case. But so again, if it has to do with how far is the dayan obligated, you know, to be responsible to hear cases, then that's one thing. If it's really a question of testing, you know, kavod shemayim and kavod ha'adam, then dafka, because you're intimidated, you know, the spotlight is shining on you, and this becomes a test of your, you know, it's almost like a Kiddush Hashem kind of a test, a litmus test about your level of commitment. But if you stop and decide you wanted to walk away from a case, you know, but there was no, implication that this had to do with, you know, kavod shemayim per se, then it actually might be easier. So that is an independent machlokas. It depends how you read the Hagos Ashri in this sugya, and the poskim Shulchan Aruch and Simin Yud Beis really debate this issue. It's very interesting that the halachas of lo saguru mipnei ish, I think I mentioned this already, both they appear in the Gemara here, and the Rambam codifies them in Perek Chaf Beis of Hilchos Sanhedrin right before he speaks about dinei pshara. It's even more striking in Shulchan Aruch. The Tur in Shulchan Aruch put the beginning of Siman Yud Beis is about lo saguru mipnei ish, the first halacha, and then the whole rest of the parak is about pshara. So not only is this parallel between of, you know, lehechan adin notah, but there seems to be an implication that the laws of Lisagur Mitneish, meaning the special obligation of a dayan, right, to his clients and to the system, are also at work in the role of dayan in suggesting pshara, and in the interplay between din and pshara as he presides over the system. You might have thought that Losagur Mipneish is one halacha, and the question of din and pshara is a totally different halacha. But in the Gemara here, that's less of a proof, because the Gemara is very, you know, disorganized, or it's organized in a different way. But the fact that the Rambam integrates them, and especially the Shulchan Aruch integrates them in this particular case, is very telling, in my opinion. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara goes on to say, as we discussed. Okay. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karchal, Merminayin le Talmud Shiyoshu lefnei Rabo, Veroz chus la'ani v'chove la'ashir. Let's say, he sees a miscarriage of justice, and he sees that the wealthy, prominent citizen is really guilty. Minayin shelo yishtok. How do we know that he, shouldn't be politically savvy, and just mute his insight? Shenemar lo togur b'nish. Lo togur b'nish, in other words, applies not only to the dayan in a case who shouldn't walk away because of intimidation of one sort or another, that's the debate, but lo togur b'nish also applies to bystanders or talmidim, dayanim in training, if you will, who are obligated. You might say, I'm not the dayan in this case, right? The Rebbe probably knows better, right? But if you really are a witness to a miscarriage of justice, even one that is politically problematic, that too is under the rubric of Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish. Rabbi Chanan Amar Lo Tachnis Dvarecha Mipnei Ish. Don't stay silent, because you're concerned about the impact of people who will oppose you. V'yu edim yodim esnihein v'idim, edim should know, what they're testifying and what the significance of their testimony is. V'lifnei mi hein me'idin, and in the presence of course, the Rabbonu Shel Olam, umi asad lifara mehen, and who they'll ultimately have to answer to, not the Ashir, but Avinu Shabashamayim, Shenemar, V'amdu shnei ha'anashim asher lahem hariv lifnei Hashem, right? And that's what the word lifnei Hashem mean, meaning there's a certain perspective here. The larger perspective, the wider perspective, is the one that, gives you courage to do the right thing, to behave with integrity. V'yu adayanim yodim esmihem danim, what do I need all this for? Like, what do I need, to antagonize one of the Balei Dinim? It's a thankless, job to be in a position to make important decisions. Talmud Lomar, Imachem Bidvar Mishpat. Right, you have to invest a certain confidence in the dayanim. If you want a dayan to put his neck out to take responsibility, if he's going to have to second guess himself all the time, maybe he's not worthy, maybe he's making the wrong decision. We want dayanim who are also people with perspective who, have a measure of humility. And who appreciate that the greats that preceded them, were men of stature who are difficult to emulate. So it's on the one end you want to attract those kind of people to the field, right? And at the same time, you run the risk of undercutting the confidence and the boldness, that you need to cultivate for these dayanim to be effective. So that's what we're being told here in this very important Gemara, that, you know, the answer to Mali Batsarazeh is Imachem Bedvar Mishpat, Ein Lo Ledayan, Elamash Ein Avros. We can't expect more from a Dayan than that he, you know, do his job with integrity. And he should have confidence that if he does it with integrity, that, you know, that that the right result will accrue. If you look at the the introduction to the Igros Moshe, Moshe Feinstein, so it's a very beautiful akdama. He writes very strongly about this idea, about Eilad Dayan, Elamash Einav, Rose. And he, he says exactly, he just fleshes this out very, very beautifully, the previous generations, how intimidating it is for a posek, especially a young posek, who's beginning his career, to be weighing in on these questions. But that's the haftocha kind of, that, you have to do yours with integrity and with humility, but also with confidence, and with strength of conviction. And if you do, there's a certain hashgacha, that protects you in this process. It's a very powerful the way he writes it. What? He wasn't a machmir. For Moshe Feinstein? He really wasn't. It's a very incorrect misconception. He was machmir in certain things, and he was incredibly makil in other things. And he had some... Moshe Feinstein was a very bold posek. When he was being machmir and when he was being makil. Meaning, he was very decisive, and he was very independent. There are some poskim who, they just quote their malachit, basically. They have tremendous bekias, and they, cite a precedent. And some of them, many of them, they line up the numbers. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, that wasn't his methodology. He went back to the sugyas. He had very original and very conviction rooted interpretations of the sugyas, sometimes the kula, sometimes the chumra, but very, very anchored in his original understanding of things. And that's why he was, the posek ador, because he, he believed what he wrote in that hakdama about Eilad Dayan Elamash Ein Avros. I mean, some of his psakim are just incredibly bold. Some of them are difficult, but he had the broad shoulders to make it. Anyways, so that's it's fascinating. There's a Tshuva the Rosh in Simen Kuvav, I think Sukkot and Zion. I think I mentioned it last week in a different context. He talks a little bit about the concept of Din Merumah. Last week I read a little bit from the Rambam in Perek Chav Dalet Hilchos Sanhedrin. The idea that, normally a Dayan, goes by the book. We're talking about Pshara, right? Which means taking the principles of the law and being more flexible. Forget about that. Let's assume a regular Yikov Adin Sahar case. Comes before a Dayan, the law is there, and he should be, he has to know the law, he has to know how to apply the law, and so on. But what if the Dayan really, he smells something wrong here? That's called Din Merumah. That same Gemara in Lamed Beis Odei says, what's Betzedek Tishpat Amisachon and Tzedek Tirdov? Right? One is regular Din, and the other is Din Merumah. So the Gemara basically invests tremendous power in the instinct or intuition of the Dayan. And at times, he can just defy the law when he feels that, something is untoward. In other words, that the Edom are lying, or that the Balei Dinim are misrepresenting something. In 9 cases out of 10, it goes by the books. But when you have an experienced judge, and he feels it's a Din Merumah, he has a lot of flexibility, in dealing with that. So what's interesting is that the Rush in this tshuva says equates that to pshara. He says just like a dayan can propose a pshara, so too a dayan, is we trust his instinct, and give him extra, flexible powers. For example, you're not supposed to min haTorah do his drisha v'chakira for dinei mamonos and dinei nefashos, as we know. Midrabanan, as we read this on Dav Gimel already, they decided that, for purpose of Shalotin Odelis Bifnei Lavin, that it would be too onerous, right? And people would stop lending money. So I said, you know what? There's no more Drisha V'Chakira for Dine Mamonis. We want to make it easier, to get convictions. So people's you know, financial security, you know, won't prevent them from lending money. Fine. But, you know, if there's a din maruma, you know, the Rambam explains, and the Gemara explains, and the Rosh elaborates. So then you have a right to say, you know what, we're dropping that drabanan. I insist on drisha v'chakira. But the powers of the dayan can go even further than that. What's fascinating is that the Rosh equates them to pshara, which implies that pshara is a form of din, but using your instinct and using your intuition. And then he quotes, after all, ela dayan elamasha einav ros. So normally the phrase ela dayan elamasha einav ros doesn't mean that. It means what it means here, or what it meant when Moshe Feinstein quoted it in the Hakdama to his Sfarim, meaning, you know, with all, you know, due humility, you're the best person to be the dayan on this case. You have to go with your instincts and with your convictions. And if you're sincere, then, you know, we can't ask more from you than that. Ela dayan elama shein of rose. But the usage of the Rush is basically more than that, and the implications are enormous. It's, you know, when you're doing pshara, not just din, or when you're involved in a din maruma, and you're using your instincts, and the extra power invested in you in order to make sure that the din is not being exploited, that too is part of your instinct as a dayan. Ela dayan ela masha inav ros. Not just follow the rules and follow the objective din according to the best of your understanding and ability, but almost like you become part of the system, a gavra dayan, where your experience and instinct, right, are also part of it. That's the idea of Ein L'dayan L'mashe Ein Avraham. Very important principles. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Hecha Dami Gemar Din. What is Gemar Din? The Gemara says, Omer Avido Marav, Ish Ploni Atachai, Ish Ploni Atazakai, which is where Rashi got it from. The actual pronouncing of a din, which is, you know, you are Chai, you are Zakai. And the Gemara says, Omer Avalach, Karab Yoshua, Yoshua Karab. Now this idea that Ish Ploni Atachai, Ish Ploni Atazakai is the Hagdara of a Gemar Din is subject to a very big discussion in the Baalei Tosas and other Rishonim, although not the Baalei Tosas here, but Tosas in other places. Tosas in Bava Kama, and Daf Samach Tes, and Tosas in Bava Metzia, and Daf, I think, Yudalid. There are other Gemaras that talk about Gemar Din, not in terms of Ploni Atazakai, Ploni Atachayiv. There are two other formulations that we find in Shas for Gemar Din that create some confusion. Here it's Ploni Atachayiv, Ploni Atazakai. In Bava Kama and Bava Metzia, it's Tzei Tein Lo. In other words, the Dayanim say, implement the Psak Din. And in a couple of places, it's Chayiv Atali Tein Lo. Right, you're obligated to give it to him. So in a way, you have three different formulations. And the question is, how come? Why? So there are some mefarshim, some rishonim, and certainly some achronim, who say, it all means the same thing. Okay, and it's lav dafka. Within that group, you know, there are those who say that everything is the equivalent of ploni atazakai, ploni atachayim. And some were saying, no, everything is seitein lo, really, but it's all the same.
Does potter fit in this? Chayiv and potter?
No? Yeah, well, chayiv and zakai, ploni ata chayiv, ploni ata zakai,
potter.
Is chayiv and potter, really. But what I'd like to try to show, and again, I don't want to go into details now, so I'm not going to go into the pratim, is that maybe there really are three different notions of Gemar Din, because there are really three different notions of Din. In other words, if you focus on the personalities, like who is right and just, and who is guilty, if you're trying to figure out guilt and innocence, it's our Gemara. And that's what our Gemara is really about. Ploni atachayev, ploni atazakai. That's a statement about the Gavra. It's a contest between the two Bali Dinim and Dinim Amanis, and we're being told, you know, which one is the winner. You know, which one is just, and which one is guilty. There are certain Dinim that depend on the status of the Bali Dinim, right? Which Nidon, you know, is guilty and which Nidon is the victim. There are other dinim that depend on the implementation of the disposition of the money. Say tainlo. In other words, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that we have a rule called Kozra Karen the Bible. If a ganav steals something, ganav steals $100. So the Gemara, the Torah says, Imi matzei haganav, right? Shalem mishalem shnayim. Or t'chayim shnayim mishalem, whatever it is. He pays double, kefel, right? You pay the principal, because the, you know, you took $100, and you pay an extra $100 for a knas, kefel. And it says, Imi matzei haganav. So the Gemara says, but chazra karen, the Bible. Let's say the ganav, you know, it's not imi matzei haganav. Let's say he returned it before the psak came down. So then you'll still pay the karen, or he'll be obligated to pay the karen, right? But kefel doesn't apply because it's chazra karen the Bible. If he gives back the principal, you know, so it's not imi matzei haganav. So what's the idea? The point is that when it comes to kefel, the issue isn't whether or not he's been found to be innocent or guilty. The issue is whether Bezin has been mechayiv, right, the payment. When I put a lien on your bank account, that's tseitemo. I can establish your guilt and your innocence, your status as a baldin, before that point. So the question is, which dinim of gemar din, for example, at what point can you switch from a din? You know, at what point can you not switch from a din to a pshara? That's what our Gemara is talking about. There the Gemara is talking about at what point, you know, is money still considered to be outstanding as opposed to being like a pikadon that is sitting already in his bank account, you know, ready to be handed over to him for purpose of chazra karen labayim. You have to look at each individual case to try to figure out which type of gemar din. Are we talking about the gemar din of guilt and innocence, or are we talking about the gemar din that relates to the disposition of the estate, of the financial arrangements that fall? Okay.
If we're dealing with kanosos, which yeah. we can't today anyway,
right?
So this is very strong language. Chayav.
Well, we're not here in this gemar. We're not dealing with kanosos. This Gemara is talking about a regular din Torah, no knas, and the question is, can you switch still over to pshara?
Guilty.
Right. $100. You damaged his property. That's not knas. I'm not talking about kepo. Let's say gneva. We've been found that you stole his property. You have to pay. Let's say kara, not kepo. But instead of saying say tainlo, give him the money. Let's say I only said ploni atachayev or ploni atazakai. So with regard to pshara, with regard to the transition from din to pshara, it's already too late. Because that depends on the status of the gavra. It doesn't depend on the arrangement of the money. But I think it's absolutely correct to say that in every din Torah, there really are two issues. One is the status of the Bali Dinim. It's a contest between them. The other is the disposition of the actual financial resolution. These are two different Gemar Dins. They have two different consequences. Yeah.
Are they different stages?
One's a later. Ploni atazakai, ploni atachayiv takes place before Tzei Teilo, for sure. Chayiv atali Teilo might be in between, if there really is such a status. But, yeah.
Maybe you can say that the pshara involves an assessment of damages. In other words, just by virtue of saying you're chayav and you're zakai,
right.
That doesn't determine the issue of how much happens.
No. Ploni atzah zakai, ploni atzah chayav is a din, not a pshara.
So maybe you can still make a pshara after you say atzah chayav.
Well, that's what Gemara says. You can't.
You can't.
That's the whole point of the
Gemara. That's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that once you say Hechidami Gemar Din, as we were saying, the Gemar Din that we said before is the cutoff point for switching from Din to Pshara. What is that? What I'm trying to say is, how come the Gemar Din, so the Shach, for example, says, that's not what the Gemar means. They mean, say, take. That's a later point. No, these are different points. You know, first I say who's guilty, who's innocent, and then I start figuring out, you know, I say, okay, time to implement, you know, the collection.
So is the Shach saying that you can still make Shara after you say Atachai V'Atachai?
Because the Shach thinks that it's really Chaitenlo.
So it,
and the Gemara doesn't mean it here. But what I'm saying is, yeah, there's a... Anyway, the Gemara then says, Amar Rav Halacha Kar B'Yeshua Ben Karcha. We pass on Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha. What does Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha say? That mitzvah livtzoa. Okay? The Gemara says, Eini. Rav Huna, Tamirei de Rav Habe, Ki Ava Asi Lekami de Rav Huna, Amalahu, Idina B'Yisui, Pshar B'Yisui. Right? He said to him, you want a din, you want a pshar. It doesn't sound like a mitzvah. Like we talked about before, right? It comes from the result of this Gemara. So the Gemara says, my mitzvah, Nami, the Kamar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha. No. What do we mean by mitzvah? Mitzvah l'meimer lehu, idina b'isu, ipshara b'isu. So that's where I mentioned before, you have this machlokas. A, what do you really say? Do you really say idina b'isu, ipshara b'isu, or do you say ipshara b'isu, idina b'isu? Moreover, no matter what you say, what do you really mean? Right? So the Taz and the Marami Prague say, even pshara as mitzvah is second best. And the Sma says, no, I don't think that's true. And if you look at the Rambam, he says, I don't think the Rambam meant that. This may be the way we say it, because din is the default. But really, what we're doing is encouraging, preferably, pshara. Okay, so the Gemara says... The Gemara says, Ika benayu, mitzvah, Rabbi Yeshua Savar mitzvah, Tanakama Savar reshus. Right? So I have three views. Because remember, Rabbi, who was it? Rabbi Lozer Benosh, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, said it was Asur Livtsoa. So Asur Livtsoa, Rashoi Livtsoa, Mitzvah Livtsoa. And what does Mitzvah Livtsoa even mean? Right? How mitzvah is it? So the Gemara says, Hainu Rabbi Shim Memanasya. So the Gemara says, "Ika benayu." Maybe the nafkamina is mishatishma devrei matayodel eichan adin note iatarashoy lomelem tzu ubitzu. Meaning, how late? What's a cutoff point to switch from pshara from din to pshara? Is it when you're yodea eichan adin note, or is it when you actually pronounce the Gemara din? And when you actually pronounce the Gemara din, is machlokas between Rashi and Tosis, as we noted. Whether it means you know you're going to pronounce this Gemara din, or you actually formulate. So it's a lot of details. But these aren't just details. These are very symbolically important arguments about the relationship between pshara and din. What I'm trying to show is there's a lot of intricate arguments here, but they all seem to be coming back to the same idea about how great a disparity there is between pshara and did. So symbolically, the capacity to switch from one to the other, you know, at a certain point, is linked to that issue too. Upligid Rav Tanchum Bar Chaniloi, from Rav Tanchum Bar Chaniloi, known them Mikra Zela Keneged Maisa Egel, that these psukim don't refer, they refer to the Egel. Shenemar, Vayar Aaron Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav, right? Mara, Amra Binyam Bar Yefet, Amra Blazer, Rachur, Shazavuach Lefanav, this famous Gemara, you know, that they killed Chur, Amar Ilo Shaman Elahu, Hashta, right, Avdi Li, Kedavdi, Bechur, they'll kill me, and it's not that he was worried, you know, just for his life, but Umakayim Bi, right, Ime Hareg, B'Mikdash Hashem, you know, Kohen V'Navi. Even tshuva wouldn't help them. So mutav de liavdu egel, said Aaron HaKohen, efshar havale takanta b'tshuva. Okay. So we'll stop here. We'll just read one more line. So of course this is very fascinating, and this is where the Mefarshim, so it's interesting, the Meiri Al-Attar says, well, we just said that pshara is such a great thing, and we paskin mitzvah livtzoa. By the way, the Meiri himself, thinks also that the different Tanayim are arguing about the nature of what Pshara really is. He says, you know, really, whether you need three or two, whether it's a mitzvah or not, that's going to determine whether the Pshara is rachok min adin, or it has to be karov ladin. Right? Meaning, how close does it have to be? If it's just shalom, it can be anything. Whatever works. But if it's based on the principles of the law, it can't be so far from the real din. Just that the real din is probably a zero-sum game, right? Either you're chayv or you're patur. And this one, okay, so we're awarding you 80% of victory, right? Or 70%, you know, victory. So the Meiri is very sensitive to this. So the Meiri says, we just had this whole gemara about pshara. So what's the story with Aaron HaKohen and the Egel? He says it's important to know that in Dine Mamanus, pshara is the chatur. But when it comes to Issur v'heter, then everybody agrees, Ikov Adin Asamar. There's no pshara. He said, of course, Aaron HaKohen did this too. Aaron HaKohen, according to some Mefarshim, is like, you know, he did well or he did, Moshe Rabbeinu is critical of Aaron. But we know that Aaron did it out of sincerity. A lot of discussions of what we call Avera Lishma center around the story of Aaron HaKohen, you know, and his role in the Ego. And it's exactly because of this Cheshbon. He was saying, listen, Al Pidin, I'm not allowed to do this. I'm willing to take the flack for it. But I think it's better for Klal Yisrael. The whole notion, of course, is a very subtle and tricky one. But anyways, the Gemara then says, I'll just read one more line, and then I want to go back, and my time's going to be up. So the Gemara says that, one other thing, V'hane tanoi poter mayim reishis madon, by darshi bekin Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna ein tchilas dino shalad menidon el al divrei Torah, shenemar poter mayim referring to Torah, reishis madon, meaning the tchilas din in the Olam Emes will be about a person's commitment to Talmud Torah. Then the Gemara says, "Rav Huna, Hay Tigra Demaya Damiel Rather Tzinor the Bidka Dami Kimin Rabach Rabach Abay Kshishi Amar Damia Leguda De Gamla Kimin De Kam Kam." Okay. Anyways, the Gemara here discusses whether or not, you know, people shouldn't interfere in other people's arguments. You know, it ends up being a disastrous kind of a thing. Anyways, what we're going to stop here, but I at least wanted to get through the Gemara's of Pshara. But I want to finish up, next week we'll do something in Inyanei Pesach, with an appropriate title. And when we continue afterwards, I do want to do one more shir on the question of Kinyan in Pshara and Mechila Tzricha Kinyan. And then we'll move on to the next topic on Daf Ches.